It is the 200th anniversary of Charlotte Bronte's birth, and we will be talking a lot about Bronte this hour. Right now, we welcome Lindsay Fay to the program. She is the author of a new novel entitled Jane Steele, a recasting of Bronte's classic novel Jane Eyre. Fay, the critically acclaimed author of the Timothy Wilde trilogy, which included such books as The Gods of Gotham, Seven for a Secret, and The Fatal Flame, gives us a heroine from the mid-19th century who is certainly ready for the 21st. She refuses to be victimized, insists on living life on her own terms, and not only pursues but defends the man she wants. The fact that she leaves several corpses in her wake as a serial killer on the side of justice makes for a satirical historical romance that is at once raucous as well as quite refined. Thank you very much. And we welcome Lindsay Fay to the roundtable this morning. Lindsay, thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you on the program.
What a marvelous introduction. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to have you on the show. So obviously we have this anniversary, which is very cool. But at what point do you, and this is how I imagine it, it may be very different, but this is how I manage it. You wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, I know, Jane Eyre is a serial killer.
I kind of did. And
good.
Well, happy birthday to Charlotte.
Yes.
By the way.
Yes.
Applause from everyone for Charlotte. I did not know about the 200th birthday anniversary. People have asked me, this is not the question you asked, but people have asked me this, you know, a number of times, and I'm like, no, I submitted this manuscript to my editor, and my editor said, do you know when Charlotte Bronte's 200th birthday theoretically would be? And I'm like, no. And she's like, oh, right when we're going to put out your book. And I said, what a great idea.
That's great. You know? Marketing genius.
Yeah, well, it was completely by accident. I was rereading Jane Eyre in my mid-30s, you know. There's a different process when you're rereading something as opposed to when you're reading something brand new and it's fresh and you're turning the pages and you just want to know what happens next, you know, to these characters. And you've just been introduced to them and they're marvelous and exciting and you want to know more about them. And you're turning the pages for that reason. But there's a different process when you're rereading something that you already love, I think, that maybe you grew up with, or maybe just hit you at the right time, or maybe just suits a certain little crevice of your personality, right?
Yeah.
So I'm rereading Jane Eyre, and it suddenly occurred to me that this young child is standing up to all of her adult detractors who are telling her, you're wicked, you are a malevolent creature, you're a liar, you're hellbound. And she just says to all of these adults in her life, no, you're wrong. I'm a good person, and you're a hypocrite. And it's amazing, and I love that Bronte wrote it that way, but suddenly it struck me as odd that a child would do that, you know? because it shows a lot of gumption for a kid to stand up to, you know, her aunt, her headmaster, the servants in the household, her teachers, and say, no, I'm actually great. You guys are awful. So I asked myself what a child put in a identical situation, essentially, a different child, one who was born during the same time period but has her own story. What if that child also was orphaned? What if she lived with an aunt who hated her and a cousin who was predatory? What if she was sent to a horrifying boarding school? What if she was then left to fend for herself? And what if instead of saying, I know I'm a good person, what if she said, so I'm evil? Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. So she essentially is stripped of a lot of the, you know, impediments that Jane Eyre would have been, you know, constrained within because of the fact that she actually thinks she's a terrible person. But people have told me in no uncertain terms that, you know, it's described as the serial killer version of Jane Eyre, and I've only encouraged that. It's also a riff off of Darkly Dreaming Dexter, and I love Dexter because we're all rooting for Dexter, right?
Yes, and that's all I thought about when I was reading the books was Dexter, who was a criminologist in the department, but he was also a serial killer, but he was only killing the bad guys.
But we all want Dexter to get away with it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it was very much that where she's not doing this because There's also one degree of removal from Dexter. Dexter, to a certain extent, enjoys it, and she doesn't. She is only ever killing in self-defense or in defense of someone who's either a loved one or somebody who's weaker than she is and is innocent and can't defend themselves. So she's kind of Batman. She's a vigilante.
Dexter
sure.
as Batman in the setting yeah. of Jane Eyre. Sure. When it comes to just this whole concept of this horrible boarding school, you point out that Charlotte Bronte actually lived at that horrible school that she describes in Jane Eyre.
She absolutely did. And speaking of her birthday and honoring this woman, I mean, oh my God, the fact that she survived the school that she attended and two of her sisters did not, that's the basis of the novel Jane Eyre. She went to a horrifying boarding school where they, you know, abused pupils, didn't really feed them, disease was rampant, and two of her sisters lost their lives. I can't imagine losing two siblings to educational neglect, you know?
Right.
And instead of sitting down and writing a sad song on her harpsichord about it, or, you know, embroidering a stern poem and hanging it on her wall, she wrote a best-selling novel and aired everybody's laundry and was outraged. And this is the really, like, demure Parsons daughter. She was not in person in any way abrasive or combative at all. She was very retiring. She was, you know, feted all over when Jane Eyre became popular, but she was said to be something of a disappointment on the London circuit because she was a very quiet person, but there was a lot of rage there because it's very personal. And I think that this is another way that I tried to make Jane Steele a tribute to her life, because she wrote with tremendous authenticity, and I tried to do the same. Even though there is absolutely a ridiculous satirical level, I tried to make this about real people and human emotions and desperation. And what do you do? Plenty of people have read Les Misérables. Is it the right decision for Jean Valjean to steal a loaf of bread? Is that a moral choice? I think most people would say, sure, stealing is wrong, but Jean Valjean should totally have taken that loaf of bread.
Right.
So Jane Steele is asking those kind of questions. When is doing the wrong thing actually doing the thing that is more morally justifiable?
And you just mentioned this, but in case it was lost in our audience when you were talking about Jane Steele being a vigilante Batman serial killer, that this is satire that you have that is wrapped in great affection and respect for the source material.
That's a very kind evaluation, and I will absolutely take it because that's what I set out to do.
Okay.
Like, that is entirely what I set out to do, was to make something that was satirical and spoke to some issues that are still going on in modern times. That are unfortunate that we have not solved yet, but that at the same time was a very loving homage to Bronte's classic, and full of, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek references to the fact that it is kind of a silly idea to reimagine Jane Eyre as Dexter, but I did it anyway.
Now you're a fan of Jane Eyre, but so is Jane Steele. She's reading the novel throughout
yeah.
your novel, and so, it's a little Seinfelded here too, I think.
It is.
And reading the novel throughout the book, and has a reaction to it.
Well, she's reacting to it as a reader of her time period, but a reader who is a very different person from the way Jane Eyre grew up.
Sure.
Because she's made different choices, so it's sort of a choose-your-own-adventure. So if you make these other choices, if you start off being just a good kid, but then you make these other choices and you go off on this different path, how does that affect your perspective of the source material, essentially? So she is an avid reader of Jane Eyre, and she says at the very beginning that she's inspired to write her confession of all of her crimes, which is what this book is, because of the fact she picked up this wonderful book that just spoke to her. And I love quoting Michael Chabon, obviously Pulitzer Prize winner,
yep.
Writer of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, among other outstanding works of fiction. And I just love him to pieces. But he wrote an essay collection, and in it, and I quote it constantly, but in it he concluded in the first essay, it's called Fan Fictions on Sherlock Holmes. He talks about how much he loved Sherlock Holmes as a child. And he says that all novels are sequels. And I think that that's beautiful. Because if you'd never read something that inspired you and just sort of lit you on fire, then there's no way you would sit down and go through the entire process of writing one.
Right.
You just wouldn't. So creating a character who loves Jane Eyre as much as I do was actually a really fun exercise because she's her own person and she, you know, like I'm not writing an autobiography here myself, but there are parts of us that are in all our characters, right? So writing her as somebody who's actually reading Jane Eyre during the time period that it was at its height of popularity and the infamous second edition of Jane Eyre has just come out and Charlotte Bronte has this scathing preface at the beginning of it now. It was published, of course, under the name Currer Bell. And then Bronte answers her detractors in this second edition that just rips holes in her critics when she says things like, conventionality is not morality, self-righteousness is not religion.
Mm.
And she is vicious and awesome in attacking the people who just said, well, this book is scandalous and we don't respect it. And I think that's great to write a character who's in the thick of that and is reading it, you know, like essentially live, like for the first time while that's going on. So that was a real pleasure to be able to write somebody like during that time period who also loves Jane Eyre.
So the woman who wrote the source material was born 200 years ago today. And why I point that out at this point as we wrap up our time together is that with that said, and with you working with that source material, your novel, Jane Steele, is very contemporary, a very, as you say, a very overtly feminist novel.
Sure. Yeah, it is. I think that Jane Eyre is an overtly feminist novel. Some people call it proto-feminist, but I think that it is a novel about, first of all, a kid who refused to listen to adults who had really poor taste in morals, and the kid was right, and they were mistaken. That's audacious for the time period. I think that Jane goes out of her way to tell Mr. Rochester no on about 60 occasions, sometimes just for the fun of it, which she doesn't even have to. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. No. Nope. Also not going to do that. Thanks, but no. which is one of the reasons the relationship actually works. And she does things on her own terms. Are there problems with that relationship? Sure, absolutely. What I wanted to do was to strip away those conventions of goodness, quote unquote, you know, from the Victorian period where just being meek and pious and chaste and silent were considered good things. And Jane Eyre absolutely defies that, and Jane Steele defies it in a different way. She defies it in a way that some of us can relate to even now because we have not solved all of the problems of gender inequality. And so continuing to write about them, I think, is a good thing, and I think that Charlotte would approve.
When you are writing a book like this, and it is satirical, and of course you have a great love for the novel, does that love carry you through, or do you have to constantly look back at an edition and say, okay, this is, you know, reread and look and see and check and have that constantly at your side?
Oh, I go through a certain amount of research process when I'm doing stuff at the beginning, and by the time I've gone through that research process for any of my books, I try to get to the point where I don't have to look back constantly because that's just irritating once you get into a flow of things. So I would say that I've read Jane Eyre enough times that it was by the time I, and Nicholas Nickleby as well, by
yeah.
Dickens. So by the time I got to the writing of it, it was much more of a, okay, so now I'm just going to let the dogs out. Like, It was release the hounds. You know, it was at that point it was fun because I had tried to gather all of my data. I front loaded that part. So did I have to look back occasionally? Sure.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be certain of myself. But did I understand all the themes and the way these people relate to each other? Yeah. I mean, that had already been absorbed, you know.
Right around the holidays, I guess during the dead of winter, I was reading Nicholas Nickleby, and I just felt like an idiot because my end conclusion, and I've read it many, many times, but my end conclusion at the end was, God, this is a great novel. You just
so
feel like
good.
An idiot. You know, it's like, this is such a great novel, and he, well, wow, this Dickens guy really has something.
Oh, wait. I was reading it on the New York subway, and it's huge, right?
Right.
That got that big old Dickens spine. And I'm sitting on the subway, and I started laughing at his description of Mr. Squeers because he says, this is the horrible headmaster, you know,
yes.
trope. So it's a horrible headmaster. And in Nicholas Nickleby, he says people didn't really like him because he had but one eye, and the general population favors two. And I'm like laughing my face off on the New York subway, and they're looking at me like, are you really reading Dickens and laughing like that? And I'm like,
yep.
Nobody look at me.
It's a perfect line, though.
It's so funny. It's always going to be funny.
The new novel is Jane Steele. It is Lindsay Fay's latest, and it's just terrific. It is out now from the folks at Putnam. Lindsay, what a delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. My pleasure.
Again, Jane Steele is Lindsay Fay's new novel. It is out from Putnam.